All right. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining our webinar this afternoon. My name is Luke Bader. I'm Director of Membership and Programs at the FAIR Institute. And this webinar today is part of our Strategic Partner webinar series, where we bring in organizations who sponsor and partner with the FAIR Institute to present to the FAIR Institute membership base on topics that are prevalent and of interest to the members and will be overall helpful to the FAIR Institute members in building a fully functioning risk management program with FAIR at their organizations. So today we have with us from RSA Archer, Chris Patterson. He is the Executive Director of Risk Transformation Office at RSA Archer. Chris is going to be presenting on, as you can see on the screen here, the path to introducing FAIR into your organizations. A couple notes before Chris starts. We are recording this session and it will be posted on the Resource Library and FAIR Institute link following the call. There is a question box in the GoToWebinar module, and throughout the webinar, if you have any specific questions about what Chris is talking about, feel free to put that those questions in the question box, and we will get to them at the end of the session. We have a Q&A time slotted at the end of the webinar. This webinar will go for an hour, so we'll end at 3 p.m. Eastern time. And I did just want to highlight a couple of upcoming events for the Institute. On Tuesday, June 18th, we are having a FAIR Institute breakfast meeting in National Harbor, kind of in conjunction with the Gartner Risk Summit that is happening that week. So if you're in the area, the greater DC area, or if you're going to be at National Harbor attending Gartner, feel free to stop by at our breakfast at the AC Hotel in the morning of Tuesday the 18th. And there is more information and a registration page up on our website in the events tab. Also, we are excited to be going back to the National Harbor at the Gaylord Convention Center in September for FairCon 19. So for September 24th and 25th, two full days of really great sessions for FairCon 19. A lot more information is up on the website and tickets are available now. So if you haven't purchased them yet, I would suggest to do so because we will fill the space and we will be on a extended guest list, waiting list. Sorry, couldn't think of the word there. For tickets at FairCon. So two exciting events coming up. All that information is on the FAIR Institute website, fairinstitute.org, under the events tab. If you have any more questions, feel free to just reach out. So with that, Chris, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you get started.
Excellent, Luke. Thanks for the introduction. Happy to have everybody here on a Wednesday afternoon. First things first, I do want to thank Denny Wan from the Australia chapter. He did review some of his content with me, and we already had some healthy debate over this, but I want to jump into this pretty quickly with everybody. So the concept is, let's be FAIR and looking at different paths to introducing the FAIR framework in the organization. So I'm very fortunate in my role here at RSA to work with dozens of customers. Kind of in different levels of maturity, sometimes looking at integrated risk management is a top-down approach, other times it's bottom-up where we have chapter members that are trying to drive FAIR into the organization. So wanted to summarize some of the different things that I've picked up and learned about as I've worked with many of these different companies and in varying sizes and different industry segments across the different organizations that are out there. So, make sure. Looked at is what does it take to change the world? So we're gonna take kind of the explorer's view of this because really what we're talking about in a lot of cases is almost a cultural change within organizations. And so I found this that even Christopher Columbus when he first set out to explore the new world in kind of fairly risky endeavor, we would say. Queen Isabella referred them back to her committees and they announced the idea was impractical, advised the monarchs not to support the proposed venture. So luckily for Christopher Columbus from his explorer standpoint, the management at the time decided, no, we're going to go to pursue this anyway. Sometimes I realize that it's not so easy for us. It often does get stuck into the committee. So why are we even trying to kind of undertake this journey or this mission And most of the folks I've run into in the FAIR chapters or practitioners, you know, it really is a set of visionaries, problem solvers. You know, they've realized that we need to seek answers to find a better way of quantifying risk and quantifying cyber risk. And over here to the side, you know, these are typical things I hear. Sometimes we're fortunate enough to have the board really pushing this, that they realize that it's a real risk to the organization. And then other times they're pressuring, say, hey, the rest of the company is operating, you know, on an ROI. Where's that ROI for information security or risk team? We're also seeing that information security teams, you know, they're being perceived as failing to deliver. This is coming from challenges with the number of breaches and exploits that are out there. It's almost become commonplace to open up your LinkedIn or your magazine of choice, LinkedIn is a choice, and find out that there are issues. So they need help in kind of improving funding for these different things. You know, are they actually targeting the right risk for their particular industry or segment? You know, some folks are still kind of operating under, let's just comply with this framework, which ends up being a checklist type of methodology. And the way I tend to say this is you absolutely need those frameworks, but use those more, if you're using Explore analogy, of your map, right? There may be many different routes or many different things you can do. Use those frameworks to guide some of that thinking, but it's not necessarily based on your industry, where all of your risk is, or, you know, what countermeasures you're going to place against that risk. You need to do some better quantification understanding of that. That ties back to, you know, audit and information security teams as they're uncovering these things. You know, they're trying to adjust the risk posture. So that may mean divesting in one set of countermeasures and investing in another. Well, you're going to generally have to have some level of dollars to justify that switch. We're seeing more and more, especially at RSA Archer, in our roles of working with customers, this concept of third-party risk has really picked up, I think, in the past year or two, especially as you again read in the different blogs and things out there, that it's often the compromise is coming through a third party, right? So probably the earliest one of these we saw is Target. But just in the past 2 weeks, there have been some other significant ones, even with development organizations and places where it does pose real risk if you're working with those partners and their security posture is not what it's supposed to be. And then kind of out on the edge of this, we're seeing a lot of digital transformation and undergoing kind of new concepts in business. And this is really where you're going into, you know, this Explore analogy. You're entering into the unknown. It's hard to determine, you know, if I undertake one of these missions, what does it look like? What risks am I actually taking on? How do I get a better handle on that? And this is that concept of digital transformation and how do you define digital risk and start to measure that in these very unexplored territories. So typically what we see when I go out and survey kind of my customers and the folks I work with, there are folks out there that are still very ad hoc and they're kind of, you know, sticking their thumb in the air and making a guess at it. The next level of maturity, they're at least trying to quantify, you know, build lists of risks, build risk registers that start to tie to the traditional high, medium, and low evaluation of risk. And then really we're seeing and emerging quicker than I think anybody expected, you know, behind the FAIR Institute, behind what the Open Group's doing with Open FAIR, any number of vendors supporting how to improve FAIR modeling with tools, that's growing. And there are other different methods for doing kind of deeper risk modeling. And then really what we see is this next generation of dynamic risk modeling. So that versus just kind of running a FAIR analysis, for example, on one set of parameters and doing that estimation once, that I can feed, you know, different parameters and telemetry into my risk model to let me know that something has changed to a certain level of variance, and I should go back and re-explore that because now, you know, some of those initial assumptions I made on that model are wrong. So that's really what has me very excited about the industry and kind of looking and managing risk within in enterprises and within organizations. It is kind of that right side of the chart there where we're getting into these emerging models. And it tends to be a maturity cycle as you talk with customers that are out there. So I'm going to do a little sidebar here. I think considering I'm talking to FAIR chapter members, most of you folks know this, but it's still one of my favorite quotes from FAIRCon 2017. Carl Conrad, in some of the opening remarks, said, hey, we've got to stop the math abuse. And really, if you've studied this at all, this is really the challenge, right? But if you look at, you know, risk matrices and how they work and how they're evaluated, the math just does not stack up. In Doug Hubbard's book, if you go into chapter 5, he talks about some of this. The white paper that's out there, or the research is three individuals in the middle. It's the risk of using risk matrices. But they go into, and, you know, for my work as a data scientist and doing statistical engineering back in my background, you know, there are at least eight different kind of issues with this as far as what's wrong with that math and why it's actually a risk into making the wrong decisions if you're only relying on these matrices. This, of course, has started a massive round of debate. If any of you guys are out on LinkedIn, you can see David Vose, and this is almost comical and satirical what he's saying, is he's saying in defense of heat maps, and when you go in and read his article, he really gets into, you know, why they're better and more accurate models to model risk. So if you're interested in joining that debate and seeing that, you know, getting out there on LinkedIn and following folks like David or Doug Hubbard, myself, there's plenty of debate around this and why heat maps are terrible and bad things to make your risk decisioning on. The problem is, you know, if you go out there and look at risk quantification on Google, I did this for fun. I got 38 million results. I thought, okay, well, maybe it'll get better if I do cyber security risk quantification. And I still had almost 4 million results out there. So you're looking at, you know, a lot of differences in opinions, different methods and ways to do this. FAIR is obviously one method. It's one that that I've embraced, and I think most of us in the FAIR chapters have embraced. And, you know, why is that? Why do we tend to look at this, and why do I think this is important? You know, it's an open source standard, right? Run by the open group. This isn't a black box model. There are a lot of these actuarial models that are out there. I tend to see them run into a little bit of a challenge when executives start diving in and debating, you know, how did you get this particular output or where did this decision come from? I've often see they have their place if you kind of need a quick benchmark to get started. But as you start to kind of make deeper and deeper decisions, not knowing how those models work and have it open for debate with, you know, other actuarials or potentially data science team members, it helps that the FAIR model is open. We're going to get into this a lot in the presentation, but that ontology by itself is very powerful and can be used with the business, right? It's in clear terms they can understand. It's something if you've worked with internal audit or you've worked with other risk practitioners within the organization, they get. The other thing we know, it can work with very limited data, this idea of doing calibrated estimations and improving your view of what the challenges are. And then mathematically and statistically sound, you can go back behind the assumptions, have those debates and talk about what the outputs are and manage them. I think most people within the webinar today understand it's the difference between precision and accuracy, that I'm trying to be more accurate, not necessarily precise. You know, I'm looking at probabilities of things happening, not the potential possibility. You know, I could be struck by a meteor, but what is the probability of that? And then really, I think that the most important goal is moving away from subjective methods into more objective methods and hard facts and making decisions. And I did think it was funny, it tied into my Explorer view and kind of thinking about this is this very old map. I think this was shortly after Columbus's voyage, maybe 100 some years later. But, you know, this isn't a very precise map of what the new world looked like, but at least it's fairly accurate, right? You can see the panhandle of panhandle of Florida, Hudson Bay up in Canada. So they're starting to get a fairly accurate view of what the new world may look like. It may not be terribly precise, because I think they're missing some of the West Coast there and some other challenges. But very clearly, that's kind of, even those explorers had to deal with some of these challenges. So how do we find our way and what some of the problems? What we're up against, and this is a lot of the debate I think that we see out online and even within the folks that are behind some of these theories and practices, you know, heat maps are everywhere, right? Why is that, right? They're easy to understand. They're well entrenched. In some cases, you have years of careers, investments, and decisions are built on these heat maps. Down here in the South, we might say it ain't broke, don't fix it. So that plays into it that hey, we haven't had issues with this. You know, why would we go change an entire methodology and swap it out? And in other cases, some people do prefer the lack of accountability, right? It's like, oh, well, we were off. Why were we off? We ranked it high and it ended up being a medium, or it was low and it became a high. How did you get there? It does free some folks of the accountability, and in some cases, some organizations like that if they're worried about their ability to get that measurement and actually quantify it. So when we approach them with concepts like FAIR, you'll run into, oh, it's new and complex. Probably the biggest thing we're going to try to address this today is, how does it fit into my current methodologies and practices? You know, does this mean that everything else we have is wrong? So you're about to throw, you know, all this expertise and the way you've been doing things out. There are higher stakes in the game because you're starting to, you know, even though they are distributions, you're tying real dollars and numbers and probabilities to this. And in some real organizations, there are, when the legal teams get involved and look at the analysis, they do get a little bit of fear of, hey, you've now assigned a dollar number to this. There's a liability that we have here. Does this actually need to go on the balance sheet? Does this actually need to, you know, appear in the annual report? So in some cases, those organizations, because they haven't really changed their culture yet, they may be fearful of the model. So the challenge is, how do we bridge this gap and get from one side to the other? And we're going to start to explore what we see there from a perspective. So this is probably the most common one I've seen. It's generally a top-down kind of pick a target and go methodology. There are several organizations I know, they're fairly mature. They had their risk matrix out there, their heat map, and they said, hey, let's take the top guy, and we think that's the biggest risk, let's go model it. In those cases, in talking with those customers and other partners that have worked with them, they very quickly then start going down to the orange dots and even the yellow dots, because they find out, you know, their assumptions and where they were placing things, even in that traditional risk register and heat map, are farther off than they expected. The other one that's common is, it could be executive driven. So it could be from, you know, somebody on the board is looking at a big project. They've asked this question. This is in my previous lifetime how we actually first started experimenting with the model relative to some fraud challenges. So you know, how much is, and the question was actually asked in a meeting one time, it's like, how much dollar value are we actually looking at here? You're asking for some investment and some data sources to go challenge this. You know, what is that going to cost me? How does that shift? So that for me was the sign that there's an opportunity to take this and go start experimenting some with FAIR. There is, however, a problem with this. You know, everybody's happy and you're getting ready to set sail, and it's great, but are you setting yourself up for mutiny, right? So suddenly, as you get deeper into this, you start to get some of these guys coming out. So here's some of the other FAIR practitioners. They're kind of letting him get up there and talk about it. They're maybe, yeah, this doesn't, I think we can make this work. We're still on board with you. You know, there's this guy here in the back. I think, you know, he just finished his first heat map. He's a little bit concerned because he was all behind it. And over here, you probably have the guy for the company that wrote the heat map development software for his organization, or made the purchasing decision. He's like, hey, you're taking everything away from me. Because you're doing this as just a single point, you really haven't changed the culture. You haven't addressed, you know, these bigger things that may be going on, quote unquote, on your ship. How are you going to get to a way to bring this in as a culture shift? And so that's really where you get to the pros and cons of approach one. It's a very direct and easy way to start using the methodology. It generally has the best success when there's full buy-in from risk organizations that FAIR should be an organizational standard. Somebody's driving that, saying we have to go here. But some of the risks are exposing your vision and position on the concept before the culture is ready. Can the methodology be dismissed too quickly before you can prove and show that it can scale? Because as you get into, you know, this practice, you know that it's tied to doing calibrated estimations. It takes some time to build up those tables and understanding of your risk. There's an investment there before it really scales very well. So, you know, there may be challenges around that. Other silos and no common ontology, you know, maybe particularly you know, an operational group is using one method, an information security team may be using another, health and safety another. So if you don't have that organization aligned, it's very quick to have these other risk practitioners come back and say, you know, hey, this isn't a valid or this isn't an effective approach. And then again, if you're just doing kind of picking one as you go out of those different buckets, you can set yourself up for, you don't have enough points of reference to actually show over time how the model is effective. So this is where in organizations I've worked with, I've seen this kind of approached a couple different ways. You know, this is to start to build that fair-based risk culture, right? And most of us have seen this slide. It's like, you know, when you look at this, are these actual risks, right? And the first thing when I'm talking with organizations that I'll say is like, well, let's try to agree on what a risk is, right? And this goes back, you don't even have to know FAIR. Go pull out any textbook from the past 20 or 30 years, and you're going to see it's this, you know, probability and magnitude. That's where your risk is coming from. So when you look at this, obviously, as trained practitioners, we know that none of these are, right? Because when I look at these, I can't assign a probability. I can't assign a magnitude. These are not risks. These are either threat communities. It could be a threat vector, it is, you know, the asset at risk, these things that we commonly know in the ontology. So I'll very often challenge organizations if I'm looking at risk registers, looking what they have listed as risk. Is that really a risk? If you can't assign a probability and magnitude to it, it's probably not an actual risk, which lucky for us is the top model or the top of the FAIR model. So this is where you can find that common ground with just about any risk practitioner that you have inside of your organization as you start on this journey. So really, we look at this from my perspective is step one, and that is going in and looking and centralizing and normalizing your risk registers, right? So different teams may have risk registers and spreadsheets. They may have them in a GRC platform like RSA Archer, wherever they are. The goal is to at least get those pulled into a central location, because now you can really start doing integrated enterprise risk management. And then the very first question as you're doing that centralization is that normalization. You know, challenging the individuals that are raising those risks is like, okay, please give me an estimate, you know, a loss magnitude in dollars, and can you assign some probability to it? Let's take a guess. Is it 3 months? Is it a year, 5 years, 10 years? And if they can't answer those questions, just like we mentioned in the previous slide, you're usually looking at this could be an input to help the estimations. You're either looking at asset, threat community, attack vector, any one of these other things. Because if it doesn't have a loss magnitude, you can't assign a probability, chances are you're not actually looking at a risk. So then you have to go back and you start to get that going. How do you prep your risk register to do that? So typically, you know, the way I've seen this done, you're going to have your scenario and your description. So have those individuals that are bringing those risks to the table. You know, what is your threat entity? What's your community threat type, assets, and risk effects? So these things can very effectively be captured within a set of fields. And in our world, we would typically cross-reference that, because that would be used, that scenario may be used in lots of decision-making around the organization, even as you start to assign countermeasures and start to manage that particular risk. The next step is just add a loss frequency range values list, set of intervals around that. And then you want to have the justification. So if I'm picking that loss frequency, you know, why do I believe that? So make that risk practitioner or even that first line of defense individual justify why they think that. Then you're into what is, a loss magnitude in the range, a set of values list and a set of intervals. And then here it's important to have them within that range at least make an estimation of what do I think the most likely loss is. You know, same thing as before. You know, what does that practitioner have for those loss magnitude estimations? Have they seen this before? You know, what's going on? Again, this is the macro level. They're probably not yet versed enough to think about kind of the secondary effects of legal action and those other things. But how do you at least start to get them to have this magnitude and probability perspective? And then what you're going to add is two calculated fields. One is going to be the risk exposure. And then what you can do is make a risk score. You kind of compress that based on the most likely. You run a logarithmic function on it to smooth that a little bit. And now suddenly I'm going to have a stack rank risk of everything within my organization that can be plotted in a heat map. And you can start to have these different debates around that calculated risk score and how those estimations were made. So what does this look like? So this is why I'm saying don't throw your risk matrix out or your heat map out. you typically have this and somebody has this. The missing piece is you haven't assigned those ranges yet. So go in and say, and this will vary by company. You know, some of the energy companies we work with, this could be in the billions. You know, those ranges have to be set kind of based on your operating model. And then the same thing for your likelihoods. Just hey, is this going to happen, you know, greater than 10 times a year? It's a very likely or the very unlikely, greater than or equal to 10 times a year. And then what you're doing, you know, typically, if you have a GRC tool similar to Archer, what we would then do is just go ahead and add those ranges and severity into your values list and give them these values so you can actually run your calculations and start to calculate the ranking of those different risks within the register. So if you look at just those very simple things we've done to improve and adjust your risk register to deal with this, to actually start stack ranking your risk, what have you done from a FAIR perspective so far? One, you're still using a beloved heat map and a traditional risk ontology. So as far as the cultural shift, it becomes a lot easier. You're still looking at something that we'll understand, and even though it's the top level of the model, and you're actually starting down that path to understand the rest of the ontology. You're also using something that just about every risk practitioner is going to be comfortable with. You're talking about a magnitude and probability. The first and second line, they're now working on that common ontology, so you're using that same language. You've cleaned up your risk register, so your risk register has been triaged to actually contain true risks. Teams are actually, when you're making them pick the values in those ranges, what are you doing? You're starting to have them do kind of this concept of calibrated estimation. They're trying to look at that business problem. It is a very wide range, but again, this concept of them at least getting some level of accuracy around the decisions I'm making, you're bringing that in, and it's going to open it up for more debate, right? And that's the next point. You have the, you know, probabilities are in there, right? You can actually start to do some very basic modeling around this, and you're also building up the data sources. When they're putting in their reasons and background for their logic, they're telling you, hey, this is where I think this data source is. So you as a second line of defense, you know, or a IT team supporting this can go help them. Hey, let's go get you the data out of the data warehouse to actually support that particular estimation, because they're giving you a sense from the first line of defense of where this data may be found. So now what do you do, right? The thing here is, even without purchasing very high-end tools that are made for scale and building things out to at least get that culture shift, there are free tools out from the FAIR Institute. Sorry, I got a little bit of background noise here.
So you have some tools from that perspective, and then also the Open Group has a spreadsheet tool. And you can see even in the Open Group side, they're only targeting the very top level of the models here from a risk standpoint. Now, this is also very important, though. You need to be very careful because this is a tipping point, right? As you start to expose people to these tools, you know, non-trained, non-FAIR certified users need to be careful about how they're doing those calibrated estimations and feeding data deeper into the models. There is some risk there, right? So when you even start using these free tools, this is very important to look at, should this be done in conjunction with a FAIR pilot program, some level of training. You can use the initial ranges from the risk register, but you're probably going to want to start to say, hey, what is the kind of reasoning and understanding behind this? How did we get to these initial estimates? We do need to also make sure that users can break out of those fixed intervals and ranges as they get into using the models. You don't want them to get stuck in thinking they have to work in those particular ranges. And then they also need to be trained on how to read those distributions. When a lot of people see those first distributions, and that's what the kind of the free tools do, they don't kind of give those executive-ready heat maps executive-ready distributions, and you're going to need to work with them to understand that. And then I have seen, you know, you can actually take the numbers out of this and manually put it into risk registers. But at some point, as you get deeper and deeper into this, that's where you're going to want that scale of an integration between the tools so that you can scale your program. It really is a journey that never ends. So these are all the other excursions, you know, that started shortly after Columbus made his first excursion to the New World. You know, you're going to see that you want to centralize, you know, more forms of risk into your common risk register. So maybe
you're starting in cyber, or maybe you're starting in operational risk. You know, how are you going to build out and bring all that stuff into this view of an integrated risk register? And how do you collect that, right? Is that sets of tools, questionnaires that you can go out as an audit team and say, hey, what are the risks you see? Push that out, let them put their scenarios in, start to let them do that first level quantification. And now maybe you may uncover things that weren't perceived as risks in the first place. You're going to have that inventory. If you're recording this in the GRC tool, you're going to have that depth of those scenarios and understanding that risk and really improve your visibility to what the impact of your organization may be. The other advantage of GRC platform like Archer is you're going to be able to have triggers for updating the model. So maybe you can put in there, hey, we need to review this model if these types of parameters change within the business. It starts to get into that continuous monitoring that if something goes out of bounds, most of the assumptions within what we thought was actual risk may be going up or down, and we need to adjust for that. It's going to give you, as we mentioned, the pathway to those different data sets that are going to allow you to improve your precision on your estimates. And then you can also use this. There's been some work around this lately, and I know the Open Group's looking at this, that FAIR is, I think most of us know, can be applied to, scenarios that are outside of the cyber risk domain. I personally used it for a fraud one. There's some work by the folks over at Capgemini to start working on this from an operational perspective. So there's quite a new kind of movement even just around the standard itself. And then what is your roadmap? You have to be very careful as we started on this journey, right? That tipping point is, when do you tip over into scalability? How are you going to, manage people through calibrated estimation sessions? How is that training? Are you going to build champions within the different organizations? As you gain the support for the program, you need to also make sure that you're building up the ability to scale behind it, so that they don't get fragmented as they are now. So really kind of, if you're looking to start your voyage down, this path, I think the key is to start working with the organization, lock in that definition of risk around loss magnitude and probability, focus on gaining your executive support. And then however you're doing your, existing risk register, you want to, adjust it, based on those parameters and start normalizing that, getting it so that risk register can change, real risk. Get that centralized. So if you have that in different spreadsheets or kind of disparately cast through the organization, if you can get that in a centralized platform, there's value in that. This allows you to start driving that awareness of FAIR and that's really the underlying model that can give you much more depth and understanding of what your risk is from a FAIR perspective. You're going to start with those basic estimations of probability and loss, just with ranges and kind of that most likely value, so that you can start to do the stack ranking. And then that gives you that ability to start building the bench of expertise in your organization as they start to see this. And the debates will come. Why is your risk in the $100 million range? I think it's less than that. I think I think it's more than that. Have that plan on how you're going to scale the program out. Be prepared to wade into it. Don't let people put, poor estimations in these tools and start to present it if they really don't understand how to use it. And that's kind of that last point of watching for the tipping points is the organization begins to mature, because one of the worst things you can do is get bad data out there, have the organization, start to shoot holes in it because there wasn't a plan on how you're going to roll FAIR out within the organization. So I got through that fairly quickly, which gives us a lot of time for open discussion. Obviously, we can jump back to any of the slides. I know that Luke has the chat platform open, I think, for us taking some questions, and be willing to do that now.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, if anybody has any questions for Chris or for me, feel free to just type them into the webinar portal and we can do a little Q&A here. Oh, one housekeeping item. Yes, thank you. The slide deck and the recording will be posted on FAIR Institute link in the resource library after the call. So both of them will be up there.
That's always like the first.
Yeah, right. I guess I forgot to say the slide deck at the beginning. So, yep, both will be up there. Chris, we have one question here that says, are you aware of any free cybersecurity risk registers?
That's a good question. I have not seen there. So there are, I know, within some of the purchase tools, such as RiskLens. I know they have those preset loss tables, and a lot of that has been built up over time through the different clients they've worked with. What I've found in going through the FAIR process and even doing some work with oil and gas in some areas, it really is. It goes back to the Doug Hubbard view of abundance, that when you start abundance of data, when you start looking at that particular scenario that you're analyzing, if you just do some simple Google searches, you'll find enough data points either through studies that other companies have done, sometimes there in government studies. So while there's no kind of one place I've seen that's, you know, hey, go grab everything from there, to actually get the data to put into your FAIR models, some simple Googling helps. The other thing is, when you're doing calibrated estimation sessions, be sure you bring in a very broad set of team members. And some of the ones I've been involved in, we had everybody from legal to forensics teams to customer service team members from the front line. And what you'll start to hear is you're going through those estimation sessions, somebody be like, yeah, we had an issue similar to that a year ago. And then somebody will know where that data source is, or they'll be able to pull it. So even though I have not come across kind of a centralized tome of all those things in one place, I think there are ways to get to it, and it really depends on, you know, we know a lot of FAIR is based on developing those scenarios up front, and then that will give you kind of the guide for where to go hunt for that information. And it's out there and it's in abundance. It may take a little bit of hunting, but again, once you find it, that's where the advantage of storing that in the platform, so that somebody else that runs into that same scenario can very quickly either go back, maybe they'll be able to contribute more, or at least they don't have to keep looking for that. So centralizing that within the GRC platform is very helpful.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, we have another question here asking about, to get started with FAIR, what training do you recommend? So from the Institute, we partner with RiskLens to bring their FAIR training courses to our members. They offer both online courses as well as on-site courses. And we have some information about that on our website that links to the RiskLens website. So if you're interested, check out our website under Learn FAIR and then the FAIR Training and Certification tab. And so there's a couple different options there on getting started. And that course will then set you up to take the certification, the Open FAIR certification exam, and the course comes with a voucher to sit for the exam as well. So there's a lot of good information on training on our website, and you can find more through RiskLens.
I'd throw in there too that you know, for me years ago, reading, even if you're not a mathematician, you're not going to get into the Monte Carlo simulation, the modeling, you know, the first four or five chapters of Jack's book, where they kind of lay out why this is kind of the right way to do things and a better way than we've been doing things in the past, was probably the most eye-opening piece for me. I was like, wow, you know, we really have been doing this wrong. We need to put some more science to this. So, and I think it goes through it in a very practical and understandable manner that you can explain to any of your business partners as well. So I think that's a really easy first step for just about anybody.
Yeah, definitely agree with that, Chris. Thanks for adding that. Another question going off of what you asked or what you were answering a question before. It says, can you help me understand the purpose of the calibration estimation sessions? Calibrated estimation sessions.
So that is part of the FAIR process. And if you get into even where Jack derived this from Doug's work, this goes back to
industrial psychology statistics and things along that line. And what it means is if you can get the right number of experts in the room that have enough depth in, you know, kind of these risk topics you're looking at, you're going to get a fairly accurate view of what your risk looks like. So you could do this right on your own, but to have somebody that's been trained in, you know, the FAIR methodology, has done some of these calibrated estimation sessions, there's a set of tools that help you kind of tighten up your view of that loss magnitude and your probabilities. That little process helps you get kind of a foothold kind of in the entire FAIR methodology. So it's a very important part, but, and this is a little bit of the risk. Well, I said there's a tipping point there. If you go do these estimations and there, you don't have a set of experts, you don't have somebody that understands how to really drive. Sometimes it's that five whys type of thing. You may have to ask three or four times why they think their estimate is what they think it is to get that debate going. But that's how you get better levels of accuracy in your modeling and why it's important. So they're within the FAIR books and within Doug Hubbard's work, if you get into it. If you're into the math, go look at Doug Hubbard's book. If you just want to understand the process, it's described as part of the methodology and trying to get to some of these estimations. The risk, again, being if you're just kind of picking numbers out of the air without doing that, you could feed poor data into your model, and we know that that's going to ultimately have some type of impact to your final decision process.
Yeah, for sure. And just a point of clarification. Doug Hubbard's book is called How to Measure Anything, but Jack Jones' book, the book on FAIR, is called Measuring and Managing Information Risk, a FAIR Approach. And we have some links on that and some information on that on our website. So just wanted to clarify those titles for everybody.
Yeah, there's Doug's book. That's, if you're really into the math, it's a good read. If you don't like math, you're probably not going to like the book.
Next question here asks, how does one measure risk dynamically with FAIR? Is that something that is possible with RSA Archer? And how does that work? And does it collect data from SIEM?
Yeah, so that you're hitting on the next generation of where all these things are going. We obviously have a very close integration with our NetWitness platform. We just announced an integration with Risk Recon for third-party risk, and that's probably the most exciting one for me. From especially everything I've seen with third-party risk here recently, and that as, and this is a good example. So what you're trying to do is you're going to feed telemetry from something that's continuously monitoring some variables out in your environment. So if you see a shift, let's say in a particular vendor's risk posture from a tool like Risk Recon, because it's monitoring kind of what they look like out on the internet, that may trigger, hey, we modeled the third party risk of, let's say, putting something in the cloud, right? Or we modeled the third party risk of turning our development practices over to a group in India. You know, if any one of those parameters change, then this would trigger it to say, hey, we need to go reevaluate that. I think what we'll see in the next 5 to 10 years is that and through partnerships with the folks building the tools, is that you may not even need to go back into the model and rerun it, that it's not a signal that I need to go fix that, you know, go review that model. It may be direct signal into the model to allow it to adjust on the fly. But that's a very good question, and why on the one slide I mentioned that a lot of this is emerging. We're not quite there yet. I think it was like, if you look at this, it's kind of out here. We are taking different data stores, whether they're structured or unstructured, and feeding them into your modeling, but that may ultimately show up on a very simple and easy to read heat map so that I understand, you know, even as my underlying FAIR models are changing, that this is what the overall impact is. That really is what the heat maps are for, right? That's executive level. I've got to kind of look at my top risks. That's why I know people are saying throw them out. I don't think you throw them out as much as you have them with very defined ranges based on how you're looking at your risks in your organization.
Yeah, totally agree with that, Chris. Someone's asking, I guess you must have done a good job, because someone's asking, would you be able to perform this presentation to a specific internal risk management group? And I assume that you'd be open to that.
Would absolutely. Probably work directly. I don't know if that's a internal RSA person, but absolutely, we can just shoot me an email and we can find out how to get that done.
Great. Thank you for that. Here's a good question. Are you aware of anyone thinking through or documenting how much additional effort, in parentheses, man hours, is needed to use FAIR versus traditional heat map type approach?
So that goes back to, I haven't benchmarked the hours, but it goes back to, let's go find that slide. So it depends on the platform. It depends on what you're doing. So we said prepping your risk register. So within RSA Archer, I'm really only adding another application here and maybe three or four other fields or adjusting some other fields. So for if you're an Archer customer using an Archer risk register, that work probably takes a grand total of 2 or 3 hours at tops, you know, to get everything tested. You'll have to get it loaded for production. So at that point, you've got the underpinnings to at least start to execute this on a broad basis, because you can deploy, you know, using the questionnaire engine. There are ways to automate this to make it faster, right? If you're doing it in spreadsheets or a manual process, it could take quite a bit longer, because you're going to have to reconsolidate. You know, as those spreadsheets come in, you're going to have to consolidate to a master risk register. So some of that really is going to depend on the tool you're using. But I know that we've added these fields. I've done this with a couple of sales engineers and a few customers. Changing the platform to collect the data and manage the process is trivial. It goes back to a lot of what we talked about. I think your bigger challenges are working with your customer or working with your stakeholders. Hey, can we agree that this is the common definition of risk? Here's how we'd like you to start collecting that and pulling that in. So as typical as we see, it's that cultural shift, not the technical shift that really is the biggest challenge. And again, we can help with that. We've got any number of advisory partners that have been through this. And the integration between RiskLens and the risk register for Archer is already complete. So if you have both tools, they can work together.
Yeah, for sure. Next question here asks about who is implementing FAIR in the industry and how mature are they? I can take a quick stab at this and you can get in more. there are a lot of companies implementing FAIR in many different verticals. One of our larger groups of members does come from the financial services industry, but we have large representation in healthcare, manufacturing, technology, banking, telecoms. So it just depends on the specific organization. It doesn't matter really what industry they come from. If you are interested in more specific information, feel free to reach out and I can talk to you more about which members specifically are more mature or have been doing this for a while. But there are a good amount of people. We have member representation from 30% of the Fortune 1000 companies, and I believe it's 75% of the Fortune 100 companies. So, a lot of people are catching on and are starting to develop in their own program. But I can talk to more specifics offline if you'd like.
The first time I went to one, we kind of were a couple hundred folks, crammed smaller hotels. Support everybody. So picking up the second question to probably ask there or think about is the level of maturity in use. And because I think everybody's learning, you know, a big part of this presentation today, there some people are just using it on their biggest risk, right? They may have a way that if they're doing a, new digital transformation project and need to do digital management, they may be using it from that perspective because they don't have a lot of precise information to go with those estimations.
maybe one of their traditional models. There are other organizations that are embedding it in all of their risk processes. So that's the advantage of even going to FinRec.
Chris, you are going in and out there.
I'll find peers, folks at the conference that'll help you kind of explore the best way to bring it into the work.
Great. So next question here asks about, do you know any good practices to convince the board of directors to introduce quantitative risk management into the organization?
Yeah, so I was lucky in the case I worked on. It was an actual executive that asked. Generally, another approach is to select a specific vendor tool to mitigate some type of risk or bring in those countermeasures. If you, as the individual, instead of bringing a heat map justification for that very large project, brought a fair analysis, you'll see that the beers perk up and the attitude changes a little bit, because for the first time, as a, especially in cybersecurity risk, you're bringing that in where you've only seen a heat map, or you expect that if you've ever heard Jack, this, he got very frustrated as a CISO in his position, because they said, how much risk do we have? And he said, we have a lot. And he goes, well, we don't do this. He goes, well, you'll have less. And so if you show up for maybe a board-specific initiative, maybe it is a digital transformation project that they're pushing, and you can show them in real numbers where you think the risks are and what the countermeasures, you know, are to improve the residual risk, that could be a first way into it, right? So find something that's important to the board that's relative to what the company's trying to accomplish from a business objective, and then do that risk analysis of if we do this, you know, what is our exposure? And then be sure to be there with their answers to say, and this is what we can do, to address that risk. And so whenever you do a fair analysis, you typically do that initial estimation of the risk, and then you start to do kind of scenario one, scenario two. You're going to do other scenarios that if I introduce these countermeasures, this is how I can kind of bend that distribution and improve my risk exposure.
Yeah, just to go off of that, we do have a couple blogs and some other webinars we've done in the past, recordings up on Fair Institute Link on the Fair Institute side, that talk about convincing your board and then also reporting to your board and some good practices around there. So check that out. And if you want to get any specific links to things, I'm happy to send them over. Just reach out to me and I will I'll send them out. So I think we have time for a couple more questions here. Next question says, how do you approach gathering estimate calibrations for vulnerability or resistive strength? This person's finding it very difficult.
That is, so it's funny that you say that. That is absolutely the most difficult part of getting those estimations for the model, right? Because they're further down the fair tree. It is where having folks that have done this before, as well as some of the models or some of the prepared loss tables are within some of the tools that are out there, including RiskLens. In general, you've got to go back. You can look at the different types of vulnerabilities, and this, you're going to need your InfoSec team to look at this, right? So if you look at something like NotPetya and WannaCry, we know that was tied to Internal Blue and some fairly available exploit kits. So you can start to, again, drive that estimation as best you can on what you see out there in the wild. The other way, and it starts to get more costly, is to start looking at, different intel providers. So like if you look at RSA and what we have with our fraud risk intelligence group, I leveraged them a little bit in an analysis years ago, because I was looking at stolen credentials on the dark web, And they were able to provide me the intel. They kind of laughed at me and they said, well, you do understand that those credentials are right out there on Facebook. And you know, so the resistance strength went down significantly because you could harvest, you know, loads and loads of credentials right out of Facebook. I didn't even have to learn how to use Tor or obfuscate myself. So whoever asked the question, it is the most difficult kind of part of the model to estimate. But as you start to drill into looking at different sources, you know, that may show that different industry benchmarks, I think over time, it's one of those places where we will probably see a consortium. And I don't know whether this comes out of the FAIR Institute, RSA, or RiskLens, or a collective team, that if we can start to better publish some metrics around that, I think that would help the community as a whole kind of get a better arm around where their exposure is. Right. So if I know it's Eternal Blue that got me and I'm running SMB V1, you know, on lots of Windows systems, then well, then my resistance strength may not be that great if I know that my wherever my patching sits at the time. If you start to think about it, you can start to go look at different exposures and try to get estimates around that. And a lot of them, as you'll see with a lot of your FAIR estimates, and this is where the scale comes in, is if you store that and keep that, you can track it over time and look for the variation. And that's where having those scenarios stored, having that data stored somewhere to go back and reevaluate your assumptions is really important.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. One question here about, are there any conferences coming up where you can get fundamentals training? Yes. Before FairCon in September, we're offering both a fundamentals course training and a more advanced user course training. They're happening at the same time on the Sunday and Monday, the 22nd and 23rd of September, before the conference, which is on the 24th and 25th. So you can buy both the training ticket and the conference ticket online. That is coming up in just a couple months. I think we have time for one more question here. Chris, can you discuss the scope of programs versus size of teams, i.e. how many calibrated estimation workshops can be done in a year, or is there a, quote, limit to the number of risks that can be quantified and managing using FAIR by a certain number of people?
You know, that for me is probably a question that we can probably get from the RiskLens team, I think, because they're really the experts in kind of running this for large organizations and understanding how the actual team behind it scales out. The advantage, again, of using tools is you're storing some of those estimates, so you're going to get some level of reuse out of that. My guess is you would want to have either champions within the different risk organizations. And again, it's going to vary so much based on industry, size of your company. It's hard to put a number on it. I would think, Luke, that may be a really good topic for FairCon, because that's yeah. One I haven't. It's kind of hard to put on it, but even if you had a construct or a framework on this is how to scale those teams out from some of the organizations that are more mature and have built those groups, I think that's a really good topic.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I want
to
highlight.
Give you a sense. To give a sense, a calibrated estimation session, you know, the first one you do, because everybody's new to it and you don't really understand it, it could take up to a day and a half. I think as you build up data, you can probably cut them down to half a day. And again, I'm not saying you do this all on every single risk you have in your risk register, right? You're going to start to cherry pick the ones that you think create the biggest exposure for your organization, and then go, or where you think you need the strongest countermeasures to offset that from a funding perspective, and start to cherry pick and go through that. And you'll build up that kind of mental memory. And one of my buddies that used to be in the Army used to call it battle rhythm. Over time, you'll pick up that that capability within the organization, and I think it becomes easier.
Yeah, for sure. And I just want to emphasize what you said, and it does, the subjectivity of it all is really there. So it depends on what your organization is, what it's doing, how large it is, how big the teams are. But there really isn't any sort of limit on it. It's just how you want to limit yourself and what resources you kind of have. That's what we've seen in the past, at least.
You could let one individual kind of run their own calibrated estimation at a very high level, at least try to get some level of accuracy, but just you need to be sure you flag it as that. Is that this was one person, their best understanding, you know, of the situation. And then if that starts to rank higher, even based on those initial estimates, then that may be, hey, we need to run a full session on this. We're looking at, you know, $20 or $30 million of exposure, you know, on a fairly frequent basis. This is something we need to dive into deeper. And that's the whole thing is use this to get your first accurate view and then decide where you're going to drill on your precision.
For sure. Yep. Well, great. Thank you so much, Chris. And I want to be respectful of everybody's time today, but I really appreciate you and RSA for being involved with the Institute and for presenting the webinar today. If anybody else has any more questions, feel free to reach out to Chris or myself, and we will be able to answer them. But with that, again, this session will be posted by the end of the day on Fair Institute Link. And I hope everybody has a nice day. Enjoy.
Hey, thanks again, Luke. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Chris. Bye.